Hello. Welcome to Discussions with DPIC. I'm Seth Rose, a fellow with the Death Penalty Information Center. Today, I'm joined by DPIC's Executive Director, Robert Dunham. Death penalty proponents have long asserted that capital punishment advances public safety by deterring murders, and this, they say, is especially true when it comes to protecting police officers. This May, we heard the argument again when the United States House of Representatives passed a bill named the Thin Blue Line Act, which, if passed by the Senate, would make the murder of local and state police officers or first responders a federal capital offense. Congressman Vern Buchanan of Florida, who drafted the bill, said at the time, "This bill will serve as a strong deterrent to anyone planning an attack against our brave men and women in uniform who protect and serve their communities." The Death Penalty Information Center recently conducted an analysis of murder data from 1987 to 2015 to determine whether the numbers support that claim. In today's podcast, we talk with DPIC Executive Director Robert Dunham about the DPIC study and what it tells us about the relationship between murder rates, killings of police officers, and the death penalty. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Seth.
First, before we get into specific details, would you give our listeners a quick overview of DPIC's study? What questions were you trying to answer?
Well, there were two different things we were looking at. First, the bill to federalize all murders of police officers was pending in Congress. And as we see from time to time in states that have abolished the death penalty, legislators in Delaware and New Mexico responded to local killings of law enforcement officers in those states by proposing to bring back their death penalties. So we wanted to see if there was some way to measure if the death penalty had any actual relationship to killings of police. Did the police get killed less frequently? Did the death penalty protect them? Was there open season on police in states that abolished capital punishment? Second, the American Bar Association was having its national convention in New York in August, and in collaboration with the New York City Bar Association, they wanted to have a discussion about what happens to murder rates and murder trends in states that abolish the death penalty, and whether there would be, the way death penalty proponents had suggested, a parade of horribles if the death penalty were repealed. That's to say, would murder rates go up? Was there open season on police? Would it become more difficult to obtain plea bargains and things along those lines? And I thought the two subjects were closely related. So we looked for the best, most authoritative data we could find on murder rates in general and on killings of police officers in particular, and we tried to find out what happened nationwide. We wanted to compare the numbers and trends between the states that always had the death penalty, states that had long ago abolished it, and states that recently abolished the death penalty. And our theory was that there should be different behavior observed in each of these states.
And if you could put it in a nutshell, what did you find?
Well, there's no evidence that the death penalty deters murder, and there's no evidence that it protects the police. Murder rates may be affected by many things, but the death penalty doesn't appear to be one of them.
A lot of people... Well, the death penalty is often promoted as an effective deterrent for murder. What's the history of this argument? Who has used it? And what have those people claimed?
One of the arguments that death penalty proponents have made for years is that it's necessary because it deters murders. It makes the public safer. And in 1976, when the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the use of the death penalty, it said, for it to be a valid punishment, for it not to be unnecessarily cruel and unusual, it had to advance some legitimate purpose, some legitimate penological purpose. One of the two purposes that the court said it could conceivably advance was deterrence. And it said at the time, the court at that time said that the evidence was equivocal as to whether the death penalty was a deterrent. But in the absence of more certain evidence, they would defer to the judgment of legislators who believed that the death penalty was a deterrent. So we've seen almost every time in which there have been proposals to bring back the death penalty, proposals to expand the death penalty, an argument that it's necessary because it reduces murders in general or reduces a particular class of murders.
Okay, and currently 31 states have the death penalty on the books. And seven states, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, New Mexico, and York, have repealed the death penalty or declared it unconstitutional since 2007. What happened to the murder rates in these transition states after abolition, and what does it tell us about deterrence?
Well, this is really interesting because, as I said earlier, we broke the states into three categories. There were states that long had the death penalty, states that had long gotten rid of it, and then these transitional states. And if the death penalty was a deterrent, we would have expected to see that the murder rates were lower in the states that had the death penalty, higher in the states that had done away with it for a long time, and we'd expect to see some sort of change in the transitional states with murder rates rising after they abolished the death penalty. That didn't happen. The numbers show that there is no consistent pattern once the death penalty is abolished. Each state seems to have its own set of patterns that they follow historically, but that as a group, there was not an increase in murders among the states that abolished the death penalty, and there was also not an increase in the rate at which police were victimized by murders.
It seems counterintuitive to me, but the states with the highest murder rates are more likely to have capital punishment on the books. Of the 16 with the highest murder rates over the last three decades, 12 have the death penalty. What explains the connection?
Well, I think that when people are analyzing the relationship between murders and the death penalty, they have it backwards. The myth is that the death penalty drives murder rates. That's the myth of deterrence. And if that were in fact the case, you would see the rates being lower in states that had the death penalty. I think what's actually happening is the other way around. Murder rates drive the death penalty. So if you are in a place that has a higher rate of murder, you are more likely to see a legislative response of punishing murder more harshly. And that's what we see. Throughout the South, where it's the highest murder rates, that's where you have the most frequent application of the death penalty.
So let's move on to talk about how deterrence relates to police killings. In May, the House passed a bill, the Thin Blue Line Act, expanding the use of the death penalty for police killings. The author of the bill cited deterrence as a basis. What does the death penalty have to do with police killings?
Well, from the numbers that we've seen, not much. This is something where I think there are a couple of different ways of looking at the numbers, because there are a couple of different things that we hear proponents of the death penalty telling us. First, if the death penalty is a deterrent for police killings, then we should see differences in the rates in which they occur between states that have the death penalty and states that don't, and we should have seen some increase relative to the national trend in police killings once a state abolished the death penalty. In fact, what we see is that there is virtually no difference in the police killing rates among states that have been long-term death penalty states and states that have been long-term abolitionist states. What we've actually seen is that there is a difference in one group, and that group is the states that abolished the death penalty. Among the states that abolished the death penalty, the rate of killing police officers is much lower than either of the other two. And one of the things that is especially important, and I think it's critical in analyzing whether the death penalty has a special value in protecting police officers, is comparing the rate at which police officers are murdered with the rate at which everybody else is murdered. If the death penalty made no difference, then you would expect to see that police officers were killed at about the same percent of overall killings in states that that had the death penalty and states that didn't. In fact, the national average, it is 0.3% of all murders nationwide involve police officers as victims. In the states that have long had the death penalty, it's 0.3% that involve police officers as victims, and it's that identical number, 3.3, in states that don't have the death penalty. In the transitional states, it's far below that. And in fact, what we see is that The percentage of murders in which police officers are killed is 1.6 times lower in the states that ultimately abolished the death penalty than in either the states that have had it for a long time or the states that have abolished it for a long time. Well, what does that mean? Because that doesn't make sense if the presence of the death penalty is driving murders. I think what it tells us again is just as we had it backwards on murders in general, that the death penalty doesn't drive murder rates drives the death penalty. What we see here is that the rate at which police officers are killed drives the political debate about the death penalty. It is a condition that makes it more difficult for abolition to occur if there are a lot of police killings. And it emphasizes the outsized political influence of police and law enforcement in decisions dealing with the death penalty. The reason that death penalty repeal was more likely to happen and was more palatable to legislators and was more acceptable to courts was because there was a tiny percentage of killings involving police officers. Not just a small number of police killings, but a tiny number as a percentage of overall killings. And so the kind of background level of political pressure you have brought by police unions, brought by district attorneys and state attorneys, that gets dissipated when you have such low rates of police killings. And that means that there was something special about the states that abolished the death penalty. It was that police were killed at disproportionately low numbers.
So given that the sample size of police killings is so small, is it fair to determine one way or another whether the death penalty deters people from killing police?
It's harder. It's harder to make that determination because the numbers are so small. One thing that you can do when you have a small sample size is look for patterns. And what we did was we aggregated the patterns. So it's not just, what was happening in Delaware or New Mexico or New Jersey. It's what's happened over this period of 30 years in these various different types of states. And those patterns are fairly stable. We would have expected to see some changes in the pattern somewhere. And when you look at the graphs, you see that when murder rates rise nationally, they rise in states that have the death penalty. They rise in states that don't have the death penalty. They tend to rise in the transitional states. And when they fall, they also fall in each of them. The patterns remain stable, whether we're dealing with murders in general or with police killings. And that suggests that the death penalty has no measurable contribution to changes in murder rates.
So moving back to the discussion of the House bill, I was watching testimony on the House floor in support of the bill, and representatives repeatedly cited two statistics to support it. One was from the National Law Enforcement Officers Fund that showed the number of police officer deaths from shootings increased 56% nationally in 2016, and another that showed that ambush-style killings of law enforcement officers increased by 167% in 2016, according to the National Association of Police Organizations. What do these statistics mean in context, and are we currently seeing a spike in police killings in this country?
What they mean in context is really not a whole lot. And we are not seeing a spike in police killings. And let me just take you through some of the numbers to explain why. I don't have any reason to doubt the accuracy of the numbers that were used in the testimony. It's just that the context in which they're given suggests that there is going to be this, and when we talk about parade of horribles, that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about, that there would be this spike and that it would be open season on police. In fact, what the numbers tell us was that the overall number of police killings in 2015 was near an all-time low. When we look at the numbers from 87 through 2015, there was only 1 year in which there were fewer murders of police officers, and that was in 2013. We were looking at murder rates of police officers, actual numbers of police officers murdered in the late 1980s it was 73 in 1987, 76 in 1988, and we're looking now at numbers that were 37 in 2015. Now, was there an increase in killings using guns? Yes, there certainly was. Does that portend open season on police? No, it doesn't, and that isn't even what the numbers show. Let's assume, now not all of the police killings are killings using guns. It's some small portion of them. But let us assume that all of the killings of police officers in 2015 had been killings using guns. A 56% increase would have raised the number of killings overall from 37 to 57. The national average over the 30-year period we looked at was 55. So that would have not have been too far outside of the national average. But we know it's less. It would still be less than that because not all of those murders were murders involving guns. And an increase in 20 murders over the course of 1 year, while it's significant, it's certainly a change from the year before, is not that unusual. In fact, there was a 20-murder increase between 2013 and 2014. And what was the reason for that? Because 2013 was the all-time low. 2015 is the next all-time low. So it is not a surprise that there would be an increase in the following year. So the number that the proponents gave is accurate. The message is completely incorrect. The second question, the second part of it was, well, what about the increase in ambush-style murders? Setting aside the subjective nature of determining whether something is an ambush-style murder, what you can say about that is that that kind of laying in wait is your typical premeditation. And so that's a special set of murders. It's a very tiny portion of the murders involving police officers, because most of the time in which police officers are killed, it's in responding to an ongoing criminal act. And it isn't your classic premeditation. It's somebody panicking or responding in a period of high stress by shooting the police officer, or when the police officer intervenes in a domestic disturbance where it's highly emotional. So this is an atypical and very small portion of the number of killings in which police officers are victims. But what do we know about them? We know that in 2016, the most prominent of these, quote, ambush killings were killings at rallies. And they were killings at rallies where? In Louisiana and in Texas, where there already is a death penalty for the murder of a police officer. So making it a federal death penalty crime, when it already failed to deter that crime, when it was already death eligible in states that use the death penalty, seems to undercut the actual argument that the death penalty proponents are making. The other thing that we've seen is that in these, quote, ambush-style killings, we have mentally ill defendants who have guns. And it's the combination of the mental illness and the access to the guns that seems to precipitate these murders. And where you have that combination, that is not a type of defendant who is going to be subject to deterrent. If somebody is killing out of mental illness, whether there is legal punishment for what they do isn't going to make a difference.
And so is there any other compelling evidence that the death penalty is an effective deterrent for police killings?
There's no evidence that it is a deterrent for police killings, let alone an effective deterrent.
Can you offer any final conclusions about what we can take away from the homicide and police killing data trends that you analyzed?
Well, I think we need to look at it in more depth. I would welcome somebody else coming in and taking a look at these numbers. We'll make them readily available because our interest is in the truth of the numbers, not in any particular message. So I'd welcome people taking a look at them. I think we should take a look at trends immediately following murders, trends immediately following abolition, and that is how far does, if there's a deviation from the national average, is there a change in the deviation shortly after abolition? And we need to look at that for 1 year after, 2 years after, 3 years after, and so forth. I think we need to do that. But I'm pretty confident in taking a look at the graphs and looking at the numbers themselves, that there isn't going to be any deterrent effect. We're not going to see that kind of deviation. I think the important lesson from this is that you have to make decisions based on facts, not based on emotion. And the facts suggest that the death penalty does not measurably contribute, if at all, to public safety. It does not measurably contribute, if at all, to protecting police officers. And if you're going to have it as a punishment, then you need to have a different justification, because deterrence is not a valid one.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you for listening to Discussions with DPIC. To learn more about the death penalty and this topic, please visit our website at www.deathpenaltyinfo.org. To receive the latest updates from DPIC, please subscribe to our podcast.